welcome all to Fabulous Las Vegas, and thank you for joining us for episode one of All the Vegas. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Weekly Magazine, and Las Vegas Magazine, and I'm here at the Space just off the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, and I hope you are ready to dig into everything that makes Las Vegas the entertainment capital of the world. Music, shows, nightlife, sports, food, we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to talk with the biggest stars and headliners, the behind-the-scenes industry people who really make Las Vegas go, and the names you don't know but need to know in order to truly understand this city on and off the Strip. It's going to be a lot of fun, so thanks for being a part of it, and thank you to Mark Chinook for being here and making this happen. Mark is the creator and founder of The Space and Monday's Dark, the coolest and wildest show in town. Mark, are you ready for this?
Dude, unreal. Long time in the making, man. This is All the Vegas, and I'm excited to be a part of it. Thank you for letting me join in on your journey. It is a cool thing. We're special. We live in a cool city. And there's a lot going on, and bringing it together like this is going to be a lot of fun.
I'm super excited, and I...
You sound it.
I don't sound like I'm excited, because I just don't, but inside, I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Our very first guest on All the Vegas is an enchanting entertainer, a singer who may not be a Las Vegan, but has some serious family ties forever connecting her to Las Vegas. AJ Lambert is performing this year in a monthly residency here at The Space, singing some of the essential songs recorded by her grandfather, Frank Sinatra. It's a really unique show, and you have to come see it and hear it. The next one is Friday, March 23rd, and you can get tickets and info at thespacelv.com. AJ, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm so excited to be here. I'll make up for your inner excitement with outer vocalizing.
Good.
Expression good. From the outside. Somebody, I mean, from the inside out.
Somebody has to be emotive around here.
I'll do it.
Until I warm up.
Okay, no, you can do it.
Are you happy to be back in Las Vegas?
I love it here. I drive up here because it's bizarre how everybody says, oh, Southwest, it's so cheap. It's like, it's kind of, but renting a car for like a day is a lot cheaper. Anyway, and I like it. I like driving. I'm one of these weird LA people who like driving. So I drive up here and I come in, and every time I come in here, I'm like, man, this is cool. Like driving out of nowhere into this, like it's neat.
The drive is cool.
It's cool.
From LA to Vegas, I like it.
Have you seen that Seven Magic Mountains thing on the side of the road? It's so cool.
Have you walked over
to it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's neat.
I love it. I think it's great. Anyway, yes, I'm very happy to be back here.
I think I'm the only person who hasn't gone out to see Seven Magic
Mountains. You
got to
see it.
It's
but
temporary.
Do it when there's not too
like
many
it's gonna go
people.
Away, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Do it when there's not too many people, because then you get the full alien playground experience.
It's really bigger than it looks.
It really
when you
is.
Walk up to it,
it's
how
really,
big it really
neat,
is.
and the color decisions are really important, deliberate.
So what you're saying is that everyone's Instagram photos do not do it justice, and I'm being a huge Vegas slacker for not going and having this experience.
All of that is true.
Yeah, you got to go.
Well, all right, that's the show. Thank you. I have Seven Magic Mountains. AJ, you were here in January, performed here at The Space. Really your Vegas debut.
Yeah.
How did it go? How did it feel?
It was great, but, you know, it was kind of emotional. I didn't expect that. I knew it was going to be, you know, a big deal, but I didn't expect to feel kind of, you know, it's a very big deal for me, who I have not done this kind of music really my whole life until now. I'm 43 years old, and it's like all of a sudden I'm connecting to this kind of honor and legacy and stuff that I never, you know, I was always a part of it, but not in a musical sense like this. So I'm stepping on a stage in Las Vegas, and I'm thinking about all these heavy thoughts about that. And it was intense, and it helped, I think, because it's an intense show. So as you know, you've seen it, but it's, you know, it helps a lot. And I love feeling that I can be in a space that's so intimate with people here, you know, because every place is so huge. And I like that here it's like I can connect with an audience like in the old days. It's nice.
Yeah, I was there and it was amazing. And I felt like it was very intense also. And I think the intimacy of the room, which is the backspace here, contributed to it quite a bit. What's the seating? How many people are in this room for the show?
We can get up to about 80, you know, 85. We can put more in there, but then it gets a little uncomfortable. But the whole design of the backspace was specifically for shows like this, so that the audience really does feel like they are a part of your journey. You know, yeah. From my entertainment background, that's part of the reason why I wanted this room to exist, was so that you have an opportunity to get on stage and tell your story, and you don't have to fight the elements. Because a lot of times in a larger venue, by the time it gets to that 20th row, the story's lost a little bit, you know. Yep. Mm-hmm. But everybody's right on top of you, and you know, I was able to see the show as well, and so honored to have you in the building. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a cool thing. It's really a cool thing.
Thanks.
I think it was one of those experiences for me where you not only feel the artist, what they're delivering, but you kind of get this feeling from everybody else in the room that everybody is connected.
That's
and I think
awesome.
That I think the biggest part of that is because of your connection to the music, which is could never be replicated or done any other way by any other person, obviously.
Yeah, it's a unique perspective. I mean, my uncle obviously did that music too. He didn't do these albums specifically, but they were both really big fans. My uncle and my grandfather were really big fans of those kind of torchy records that my grandfather did. But at the same time, there, you know, the generational differences between like from Frank to my uncle, my mom and my aunt to us, to the grandkids, it's like very, I mean, that's the same in any family, I guess. But those relationships, as they sort of disseminate and kind of percolate down, the relationships and the relationship to music that this person did becomes really different. I don't have the kind of super direct enmeshment that they have with him, and the name, which means a lot. People ask me all the time, like, why don't you use, and I'm like, it's not my name. You know, it's not. And it symbolically puts you at a remove from a lot of stuff. But their relationships with him are so different than mine. And I feel like the way that I'm communicating that stuff in these shows is in part about having that remove and trying to have a relationship that I didn't have. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's why for me, those albums are so important, because they're kind of desperate. And I have that feeling about this person. It's like, I want to know so much more and I can't, you know? So that's why they're so, I was about to say easy for me to sing. They're absolutely not easy in terms of technical. They're ridiculously hard things to sing. I want to do them because mm-hmm. they let me have something that I can't have in real life. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. The albums that we're speaking of, well, first the January show was in the Wee Small Hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should mention that. Yeah, this February one was in the Wee Small Hours as well. March begins the Only the Lonely rotation. So we're going to switch off every month. So you get to pick kind of which one you want to drown your sorrows with. And they're... You know, for different reasons, though, they're crowd pleasers, which is really odd. So for a lot of audiences, it's the experience of, I've heard this record a billion times, and it's like my stoner record, or it's my getting down record, or whatever it is, or it's my blues record when I'm all messed up, or whatever that is for you. You never have had a chance to hear it perform live, because no one's ever done it. My grandfather didn't do it. So it's kind of interesting to see them live, because it's a very different thing than hearing it with the orchestras and the arrangements. I mean, we do the arrangements, but it's me and a piano. So yeah, I mean, In the Wee Small Hours is a very different feeling than Only the Lonely. I'm finding out because I just started doing it, and it's very different, and it's really interesting how different it is.
What?
But it's got hits, you know. It's got that one has, you know, One for My Baby, and it has Angel Eyes, and it has Blues in the Night, like things that, you know, you associate with him, and you're going to hear him in context, which is something I really like about doing these shows, mm-hmm. is that they're in context, the way they're supposed to kind of be a part of a whole. And that, by the way, was his favorite record, was Only the Lonely. So I'm like, as I say in the show, I'm not nervous at all. This is not at all intimidating at all.
It seems incredibly intimidating, mm-hmm. but the Wee Small Hours album and your show closes with This Love of Mine,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't realize. I'm not an expert on Frank Sinatra, as it turns out, but I didn't know how few songs he wrote or co-wrote, and that's one of very few, right?
Yeah, I think it's two. I mean, and the other one, I think it was like a what do they call that in publishing, where it's like a version, you know, like where you arrange some things to an extent that it's so different that you can claim writer credit. This is one where he actually wrote it. Like, he actually wrote the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that that's the one that he wrote. It's just, it's so, you know, like I say in the show, it's indicative to me of this character of someone who's kind of perpetually on the edge of the blues, like all the time, you know, just, it's kind of always there. And I am that person for sure. And he definitely was. And I think that song like totally indicates that, you know, to be able to write something like that at such a young age and so happy, relatively, you never know. It's always kind of lurking.
Does that song have a different meaning for you or significance for you since he wrote it or wrote the lyrics to it versus other songs that he, you know, is interpreting or performing?
I mean, sure. He always said that the song is the most important thing, obviously, because, you know, there's the song is you, right? That song. And then there's Without a Song. And those are about this idea that, I mean, you can't communicate this stuff without these people starting it out for you, writing the music. And to me, to know that he was one of those people for a second, you know, that did this writing something that you could then interpret, it's kind of amazing to think about it, because he was so known for interpreting, and here he's interpreting something he wrote, but he's interpreting it 10 years after he wrote it. So it's like, it's meta. I hate saying that, but I said it, sorry. But you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. So what songs are you looking forward to performing most from the next record?
From Only the Lonely.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, like I said, it's so different. It was comprised and compiled and recorded 3 years after In the Wee Small Hours. And it's interesting to feel the difference in the person who is behind it in 3 years' time. And to me, it's quite an edgier record. I can hear it in his voice, and I can hear it just in the delivery. It's got a lot more of an edge to it. So I feel like it's got a little bit more swagger than the first one that I've been doing. So that's interesting for me, because my whole thing about doing these records is that I need to feel like I can do songs that like a 43-year-old pint-sized person can sing, as opposed to, you know, bigger than life Frank Sinatra. It's like, it's different. It's different. So it's interesting. I'd say from that one, I had a really strange experience. I sang it the other night, and I felt like I couldn't get through One for My Baby. I really felt like I was going to start freaking out and crying and stuff. I was not expecting to feel that at all. I was like, it was everything. It was a combination of, like, the pressure of doing that and, like, it's so associated with him, and it was so emotional. It was crazy. It gave me like a really bizarre feeling that I was not expecting. So now it's like, oh, great. I get, and for me, because I'm a psychotic person, I'm like, oh, fantastic. I get to like have that connection to this music that I didn't know was there. It's incredible. So that for sure. Angel Eyes is an amazing song to sing. I just feel lucky, like I get to sing all these cool songs, you know?
What's crazy, another one, you know,
that
listening.
I love? Blues in the Night is so amazing to sing.
It's what's like, crazy to me is listening is that we all have our grandfather stories, right? Like people listening are going to go, oh, I remember my grandfather used to do that and you would do that. You know, I do this because my grandfather did it. When listening to you tell these stories and all of us being able to relate because we know who your grandfather was is so unique and so amazing
yeah,
to
weird.
Me. You know what I mean? Like, because we think, oh, you know, I can whittle this stick down and make this little stick figure because my grandfather taught me how to do this.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here talking to us about songs that obviously are so iconic and part of our culture and, you know, it's your grandfather, though, that sang
yeah.
these songs and told these stories. That's what's so incredible about
yeah.
about listening to you tell it. Because, you know, we all have in our minds our ideas of who Frank Sinatra is
sure.
or was to each of us. But to hear it now from you is, I think, such a special thing for me personally, you know, to have that at the space and to be able to sit here and just listen to you talk about it is pretty unique.
Thanks. I'm happy to share it. Like, this is such a crazy. I feel it. I feel how crazy it is. Because I didn't, like I said, I haven't had this in my life as a human, you know, until now, until I'm half dead. It's like, it's so crazy.
We're just getting started. Half dead. Easy.
43. That's middle age.
Nah.
If I make it to 90, I'm half dead.
Shh.
But I accept it. It's all about acceptance.
Well, there's a lot of that storytelling in the show too, in between.
Yeah.
In between songs, you're telling stories about his life and your life and how that was. Without giving away those stories, how do you characterize? Everyone asks you this, I know, but how do you characterize your relationship with your grandfather?
It's hard. It's honestly hard for me to characterize it. When people ask me about, you know, my favorite memory, that's the question I get all the time. And it's frustrating for me to answer that question because I can't distill it to one thing for two reasons. One, it's impossible. I mean, if you guys tried to do it, like you were saying, like with someone you were close to, your grandfather, like it's impossible to, you know, take it down to whittling mm-hmm. the stick. It's like but they ask me to do that all the time. And it always ends up sounding pat and ridiculous, like, oh, he was a good cook, or, you know, he liked animals. It's like, no, it was a lot more than that. But the second reason it's hard is because I didn't have that close of a relationship with him because I was a little kid. You know, and by the time I was old enough to be a human relating to a human, he was starting to decline and I was not around. And like, it just so that's part of the show is like I missed it. So I'm trying to get it through this stuff because I know that we're alike. I just know it. It's like I just feel it. I don't know how to explain it. I just do.
How much of that alikeness have you discovered through the music?
A lot. But part of why I started doing it in the first place is because my life was starting to kind of go that way. And I'm like, I'm relating to this stuff in a really new and kind of messed up way because I'm getting it like verbatim, you know, second divorce right on cue at the right age. And like, it's bizarre. It's really strange. And so I don't know. It's, I related to it before, but in a really different way. And now it's sure it's about age and stuff, but I think it also takes a little bit of maturity for me as a singer, not as a person, because I'm definitely not a mature person, but to kind of say, I'm willing to like take the chance to try to figure out how to sing this properly and not just make it sound pretty. You know, because I don't know. I think there's a difference.
Big difference.
Between, because they can sound great,
mm-hmm.
but I don't, I mean, a lot of people can do that. I want to make it interesting for people to hear this particular person singing that song. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to me.
And you've done other things musically in your life. You were in a punk band, for example.
Oh God. Well, I mean, yeah, I can only definitively say that about one, which is it was this really funny situation where, so this band, The Homosexuals, was around, and I'm not saying that in any way. That's the actual band name, and it was as punk as it gets. That was a 70s band who, this guy Bruno Wizard is the leader of the band, and he came to New York, and he decided that he was going to make a new band, and it was amazing to kind of reinvigorate The Homosexuals. If anyone knows who they are, if you know them, you know what they sound like, and they're amazing. They're like the math rock punks, if that makes sense. Like, they're not, it's not really straightforward music. It's quite angular and crazy. And he's a very unique person. Anyway, so he came to New York, this like 60-something-year-old crazy punk dude. And he decided to redo this band. And our friend was recording them and was in it. And they lost their bass player because the bass player had to go out on tour with somebody. So the girl who I was in this other band with and myself were the bass players for the shows because there were so many songs and they're so hard for bass play. Like, they're really, really, really difficult songs. And the tour was coming and they couldn't find somebody to learn it in like a week. So we both went with them, and like, I'd play five songs and then she'd play five songs and then I'd play five songs. It was this really funny situation. And it was great. I mean, people would go nuts when they saw that we were playing, because if you're that deep of a fan of that kind of music, it's like, what? They're reformed. It was crazy. So I felt really honored to be in that.
Two bass players.
Yeah. And we'd switch. That's very funny. But yeah, I mean, that was my main thing for a long time, was playing bass. And I didn't tackle singing in any proper way until like now, past couple of years.
Did you know earlier on as a musician or developing musician, did you know that you were going to engage with this material at some point? Did you want to? Were you avoiding it intentionally, or?
I was offered all kinds of help and stuff with my stuff that I was doing, and I decidedly didn't take that because I felt like, not that it wasn't good enough, but like, I don't know. I feel like when I see people who kind of, I didn't want to like tarnish anything, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to be, they put so much pressure on you. They just do. And I understand it. It's like, oh, here comes the kid who's the musician. Here comes the grandkid who's the musician. I mean, that's just how it is. And I understand that, actually. Like, it should be really good. It's like, we don't want to see somebody doing their shit that everybody else is. Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're fine.
Sorry. That everybody else is, you know, doing in their basement.
Surprised it only got out now.
Sorry. Yeah, I know. I am too, actually. That everybody's doing, and just because you're so-and-so, how come you get to do it? Like, I really didn't want that to happen, because I don't want that at all. And the stuff I was doing, it was fine. I mean, it was good, but I don't know. I was really proud of my band Looker, but it wasn't my band. It was these two women who were the leaders of this band, and they were amazing songwriters and really great. And we were having quite a bit of success in England, of all places. This is where they were liking us a lot. And I made a point, like, we got our PR person and we got our, like, stuff was happening, and they kept saying, like, well, when are we going to break the news to everybody that the bass player is Frank Sinatra's granddaughter? And I was like, you're not doing it. I'm sorry, but this is not my show. This is their show, and I'm not going to do. And there was a show that was, the listing was in the Time Out in London, when we had one show in London, and some writer got a hold of it and put it in the listing for the show, and I was livid. And they were pissed. Like, my band was pissed. And I understood. I was like, yeah, it's not me. It's not my show. Mm-hmm. Anyway, those were fun days. And we did a pretty good job without that Sinatra thing. Mm-hmm. Like it was successful. So, and now, you know, I only feel comfortable doing it now because I've worked at it. I feel like I have a way to do this music without sounding like a schmuck. And I have something unique to say when I'm interpreting it. And no one else is doing it. You know, we lost my uncle like a year and a half. No, it's 2 years ago now. And it's not right that there's no Sinatra music being performed, not by a how do I say this diplomatically, a cover band, you know,
yeah,
an imitation band.
It's awesome.
Which is cool that they do that. It's fine. This is something else. This is different. So I think that answered your question. I don't know though.
Yes,
I can talk.
All-time favorite Nancy Sinatra song.
Wow. It's a tie between Lightning's Girl and Happy. How's that?
I'll take it.
I like both of those a lot. Those are great. She was so lucky with these musicians she got to work with, man. I can't believe it. These people are incredible.
I think that was but that's a reflection of who she was, and,
totally.
And also with your grandfather too. Like he worked with some incredible people.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's a talent attracting talent. You know,
yeah.
there's no question in my mind that's in my opinion what that
yeah.
was about. 'Cause you see it today. You even
totally.
See it in today's music. It doesn't matter the style or the genre, the talent just surrounds themselves with talent, and artists want to work with other artists that they respect, and there's
yeah.
that mutual collaboration where
yeah.
they come together and just make good shit.
Yeah, exactly. I there's such a zeitgeisty moment in her music where it's like, I'm not talking about like the you know, the Boots thing, that record and stuff with all those Beatles covers and stuff. It's like I like it. It's not my favorite though. That's like this later kind of 70s thing. That's so interesting, and she really found her spot, and I wish more people knew about that stuff. But she put out a whole bunch of stuff on iTunes, so you can find it. It is possible to find it. I am still mad at her for not letting me produce a proper reissue situation / discography, but that will go unspoken. From henceforth till forever.
When we spoke earlier this year, and you can read that interview at lasvegassun.com.
And you should.
Mm-hmm.
When we spoke earlier, you talked about, you know, again, not being able to characterize your relationship with your grandfather. And you talked about how, I mean, obviously he was your granddad and he wasn't what he is to the rest of the world. Your mom was, to me, I think most people kind of still associate her with the whole swinging 60s thing. Is that, do you have a similar situation with her in that, like, just kind of the iconography of her is bizarre to you?
It's just different. I think it's when there's an easy kind of what's the word, like signal, not signal, but like what's a verbal visual language, what is that word, a visual language,
I have no idea,
so like signposts, like her look, right, her look, the songs, like the lyrics and the
yeah.
thing and the attitude and the thing promotes this sort of idea, and she's like that, and she's really not, like, she's like really old fashioned in a lot of ways, like really, and I'm yeah, to me it is a little jarring because she's real old school in a lot of ways that to me doesn't quite jibe with that image, but she does it really well, like she, that's her comfort of where her voice is and like her style and stuff. So it's like, it's not that it's inauthentic. It's just, to me, I'm the daughter. So it's like, it does seem a little like, but it's like my kid, you know, when my kid sees me put on like my makeup for a show, I get pretty dolled up and she's kind of like, who's that? I'm like, this is my costume. This is my theater, you know? So I don't know how much of it was theater for her, but the one thing I can say is she was really, really passionate about music and singing. She really was. She really, really loved it, for real.
Have you ever performed something stupid?
I have, and I hate every second of it.
I kind of thought that you were going to say.
I don't like the song, first of all. Sorry. I just think it's terrible. I think it's a terrible song.
So you won't be doing a duet of it with Mark in the show?
Actually, right now. You know five, what? Six, seven, eight.
And also, it's actually quite hard to sing. It's really strange. I did it. Steve Tyrell is a really good friend of mine and my family, and he super generously invited me to sing a few songs with him when he was playing like a week in LA at this club, and that was one of them. And I'm like, okay, obviously I'm gonna do it because this famous person is asking me to sing with him at this big place. But it's hard because I'm like, oh, this has nothing to do with me except that I came out of one human who came out of another human. It's like, it's weird, man. I can't, it's hard. I'm not a fan, sorry.
All right, I'll just have to be disappointed.
You'll be disappointed forever.
I'll do a duet after the show.
Well,
myself.
It's like my mom never made any bones about the fact that she didn't like these boots are made for walking. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather hates strangers in the night, so. Oh my God, you're frowning. The frowniest frown.
Did that hurt, Mark? Did that hurt to hear that?
No, but again, it just goes to, you know, these are iconic songs.
Really,
and so,
like,
you know, people are going to have their stories and memories to each of them.
Well, but that's the thing. The beauty of it, if I may wax philosophical for a moment, is that it doesn't deplete how mm-mm. you feel about the song. It's like when I found out that I'm trying to think of somebody who I know who hates something that I love. Actually, yeah. So I do the Spoon song on my record, and you know, I'm acquaintances with Britt Daniel, and he told me that, you know, Sister Jack, which is a song that my daughter and I really love, and he's like, eh. I'm like, what? I thought we could bond over this, man. He's like, eh.
Yeah, no.
So it happens.
No, it happens. Totally happens. In shows even, you know, and performing in a Broadway show or something. There are moments that you just hate doing.
But right.
Audiences love it. So
yep.
yeah, there are
yep.
those moments.
Yep.
Same with songs, I guess.
But isn't that funny, like how you find a way to, I have not had that experience that much in my life. You've performed a lot more various songs than I have. And it's, how do you like get through it when you have to do one of those?
You just do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just do. You know, and you personalize it.
Yeah.
You know, it's no different than what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
I have my own technique about it, but
yeah,
I just kind of, I don't know, if do I like dissociate from my body or something? I don't know what it is. Acting. It's acting, right?
It is.
Acting.
It is.
Mark, do you hate the music from The Lion King?
I don't need to hear the Lion King music anymore. Yeah. Yeah. But again, there are things that you associate with the music of the Lion. It wasn't necessarily so much the music, because
sure.
obviously Elton John and Tim Rice wrote beautiful music. When I think of the Lion King, I instantly think of the green face paint that I had to wear every night.
Right.
And that was just torturous.
Wow.
You know, getting painted green every night and carrying around this puppet was a joy. You know, being a puppeteer and bringing this you know, weird object to life was incredible. But
it's still
having green paint in the crevices of your ears.
Yeah.
And going home and seeing it on your pillowcase the next morning.
Isn't that funny that you
looked like I had jaundice. I literally for 3 years of my life walked around and looked yellow because the green really never came off, and I looked like I had jaundice. And people were like, "Are you okay? Are you sick?"
I'm like, "No." Do you think the Blue Man Group has that?
I would imagine.
Do they have a cast all
the
time?
Yeah, I would imagine they must hate the blue paint. Like, it's in your nostrils and your ears and your fingernails.
I never even thought of that.
Yeah. So as much as I you know, loved my time with the mouse, that green paint, I don't miss it at all.
Holy cow.
At all.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, little things. You know, like the Rock of Ages, I put a mullet on every night. So I wore a wig every night. And, you know, there are things about the job that you do. Again, it's not like you're doing a movie and you shoot a film and you're done.
Right.
You know, this is 8 shows a week for an open-ended contract where you've got to put the same thing on. And the green paint definitely got to me.
See, I never, that's something that like my family did too. Multiple shows like for a week or 2 weeks or like twice a night and all this stuff. And I think about that. It's like, that's hard. Like bringing the same level every time, like you had to do like that. I'm just ending a monthly residency in LA. And to me, like doing it the same one every month is hard. But can you imagine like y'all doing it every night? That's hard.
Yeah, we just do it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's one of the things that fascinates me most about the Vegas entertainer, everybody in the shows, like the production shows, that they keep doing this and they love it and they're so good at it.
It's, and you really can feel it. You can feel that they love it. It's amazing. Isn't that incredible? Y'all go to a show. Go see a show.
Go see a show.
Go see a show. It's so great.
AJ, you also finished recording an album last year.
We finished it and it was mastered last month by the wonderful Greg Calbee, which happened so suddenly and amazingly, and I'm just like beside myself still that this happened, because this guy is a legend. If you know who Greg Calbee is, he's like one of the most legendary mastering engineers ever. And I went into the studio where he works in New York, and on the side of the wall, like when you walk in and you shut the door, like in here, there's a frame picture, like a note, and it says, so here's, I want to, you know, bump up this, you know, 2K on this part of the song and blah, 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 and all these very detailed things. And so tomorrow, if I'm not here, you know, you can get started. Go ahead. I trust your ears. Thanks, John. And there's a John Lennon face, and it's John Lennon's note to him. And I'm just like, oh my God, where am I? Like, this guy mastered, you know, Low by David Bowie, like so many things that are like my totems. Anyway, so yes, I had to gush for a second. It's done, and it's just looking for the right home at this point. So we're going to figure that out this year.
What are some of the songs on there that you're going
to get? There's three that my grandfather did. There's Ebb Tide, there's Sleep Warm, and there is I'll Be Seeing You. And then we have everything from a John Cale song to a Spoon song to we have a TV on the Radio song. Like, it really runs the gamut of just music that I think is really good and well-written. And it's all, you know, it actually all sounds like it's one record, which is kind of weird if you think about it, like Frank Sinatra and TV on the Radio on the same record. But it sounds like one thing.
It works,
which was sort of my point behind it, was like, hey, it's just all really good music, you know? So it's exciting.
That's
really excited.
And
so many good musicians on it, too. I'm really excited.
Well, we cannot wait to check it out.
Yay.
Now, it's time for us to give all the Vegas listeners the Vegas you need. The Vegas you need. This is where we go around our lovely gambling table here, our poker table, and recommend something that's going on in Vegas right now that you absolutely must experience. And we are experts.
Do not doubt it.
No pressure.
I have lived here for a long time.
No pressure. I'm very old,
and I know everything.
Okay.
Wow. Not really.
I would go with that.
Let's start with our guest, AJ. What do you think people need to check out in Vegas right now?
There, I can say two things. Three, if we count Seven Magic Mountains, which we've already covered. I thought of a fourth.
Wow.
Hiking. Did you know that you can go hiking in Red Rock? Mm-hmm. Did you all know that? I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
If you are an athletic type, which I am not, even if you're not, you can go and experience nature in all its glory in the Red Rock area where you can go. I don't know what it's called, but it's very close.
It's very close.
And you can park your car and go on an amazing hike that's like, it looks like you're in Thelma and Louise for an hour. It's amazing. Aside from that and the Seven Magic Mountains, which we've covered now three times, I would say a discovery that I've made is the pseudo downtown area that has my favorite bar. I don't even drink, and I love this place called the Velveteen Rabbit. I would highly recommend going there because it's great. It's in the middle of nowhere, and it's super sketchy, and it's amazing. No, it's sketchy in that you pull up. When I came there the first time, I had my rental car, and I'm like, I don't know where this is. And I pulled up across the street from it, and it's like a is it a deli or a pawn shop or something? There's something right there, and you park right in front of it, and then you're kind of like looking around, and then you turn and you look across the street, and this is very welcoming looking kind of hidden thing, and you open the door and you're in not Las Vegas. It's the craziest thing, and they're sweet people. They're really, really nice, and it's intimate and cozy, and it looks like nothing else here, and it's great. And then the other thing I would say that is another issue that is, yeah, it's great.
Keep going.
The only other thing I would say that is old hat at this point is that whole Spring Mountain Chinese Japanese food thing. I'm a relative newbie to this. I think this is the most fun thing. So you just park in a mall and just spend like 2 hours in this place.
I love the
eat everything.
The view of the
what the hell the of the Taurus. I'm the newbie. Yeah, but what is the? There's one in particular. Oh, sorry, I tapped. There's one in particular that is on the left, and it's a big giant one, and it had the day I went, I had amazing sushi on the first level, and then when I went up to the top, there was the veggie Chinese place. Do you know this one that I'm talking about?
Yes, this is, I can't remember the name of
veggie
that
house.
Strip mall.
It
might be
Veggie House?
Pan Asian Plaza or something like that.
It's
Spring Mountain Road near Decatur.
Yeah.
Correct.
On the right.
Veggie House is the vegetarian restaurant you're
speaking
of.
Up the hill.
Yeah.
It's like as you're coming up the hill, it's there. And it was absolutely, I had to wait for like half an hour to 45 minutes. This place was so crowded.
They were growing the vegetables.
They were growing them, fermenting them, harvesting, steaming. But it was worth it. Holy cow.
Chinatown, Las Vegas is absolutely the mother lode. And
actually,
my pick is also in Chinatown, but I'm going to wait because it's time for Mark to give you the Vegas you need.
The Vegas you need. Do I get to give six like AJ did, or are we supposed to give one?
I took too many.
I'm going to give one.
Oh, damn it.
Thanks,
because
AJ.
I'm going to do this show again.
I'm going to do the show too.
I'm going to give one, and it is our latest and greatest sports franchise that has come to town.
Right.
The Vegas you need is the Vegas Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena, currently in first place in the Pacific Division and well on their way to making the playoffs in their first inaugural season.
That's amazing.
But not only from a hockey standpoint, from the actual sport itself. This is something that the community has needed for a long time, and they've really given the city something to cheer about, a reason to come together. So if you can actually get a hold of a pair of tickets, and even if you are a hockey fan or not, the experience inside the Fortress, T-Mobile Arena, when the Vegas Golden Knights play hockey is unlike anything this city has ever seen.
And, it's a ringing endorsement.
It is an incredible experience, and all of these players are playing with a chip on their shoulder because they all came from a team that didn't protect them in the expansion draft. So they all are playing with a purpose. We have probably one of the best coaches in the game, one of the best general managers in the game. And we are starting to develop a fan base that is fantastic. Other teams are coming to town and saying how the atmosphere inside the arena is unlike anything in the league. So that's a testament to our fans and to the city. So the Vegas you need is the Vegas Golden Knights.
I fully endorse all of these recommendations. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights have, as our first major league professional franchise, have not only been a success right out of the gate, but I think changed the Vegas entertainment scene. Now we have this other piece to go along with everything else that we already had, and it's a great time to be here. My pick for the Vegas you need right now is a restaurant called Sparrow and Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
It opened last year. It is on Spring Mountain Road. It is not an Asian restaurant like many in the area are, but
it's right on the corner there, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, people don't think that the off-strip restaurant scene is super cool. And you go to other cities that are really great restaurant cities, and they have dozens of these, like, super hip places to eat with food that's using, like, old-world techniques and different flavors, and it's kind of fusion-y and blah, blah, blah. Sparrow and Wolf is the Vegas version of that. But it's not. Wow. That might make it sound like it's kind of pretentious, and it's not. You don't have to be a foodie type person to enjoy this place. It's very laid back. Go in there, sit at the bar, get a drink, order as many things as you think you can eat. Everything's going to be delicious.
I know where I'm going.
Sparrow and Wolf. AJ, thanks again so much for being here with us.
You're welcome. And thank you.
Sharing everything with us. AJ Lambert will perform at The Space on March 23rd and other Fridays throughout the year, all the way till November. I would reel off the dates, but why don't you just go to allthevegas.com to see where she's, to see when she's playing. And also, there's going to be information there about all the stuff that we've just recommended. AJ, you're the best.
Thank you, my dear.
This was so much fun.
Thank you so much.
Mark, what else is coming up at The Space in March? Besides Monday's Dark, of course.
Yeah, it's the home to Monday's Dark. We've got Tony winner, John Lloyd Young, the first weekend in March. He obviously known for his role of Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys. He was also Frankie Valli in the film Jersey Boys. He'll be here over the weekend. And everything's on our website, thespacelv.com. It's been a whirlwind our first year in business, and to have talents like AJ and John grace our stage and really solidify the venue and put us on the map in Las Vegas is a treat. So, Brock, thank you for bringing this show to The Space, and AJ, thank you for being a guest. It's been awesome.
Thanks again.
You can read all of my various ramblings at lasvegassun.com. LasVegasWeekly.com and LasVegasMagazine.com. Of course, go to AllTheVegas.com. All kinds of fun stuff there in addition to this podcast. And please follow us on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at AllTheVegas. Thanks everyone for being with us today. Drive carefully. Come back soon.